I am driving in to go to work, and there is a car in my spot, and I'm frustrated. So I call the tow company and say, come get this car. It's the third one down on the right-hand side. Good. I go and park in the staff parking lot and walk over, and I don't remember exactly how it all went down. But it turns out I had a staff member's car towed. I don't know why she was in my spot. And she was someone who really cultivated victim. And I just smashed on victim. So one of my partners decided that I had done it on purpose. And he was mad. And he crucified me to anyone who would listen, including me. And he said, I just don't believe you. You knew it was her car when you had it towed. And I was really taken aback. Like, really? You think I'm that kind of person? What have I ever done to you? Ha, fourth step. What have I ever done to you? So I went and I wrote my fourth step. And what came up was that 2 days before that, I had sent an email to all of the partners saying, I don't know why we have this paralegal on staff, because as far as I know, none of us really use her. What's she doing here? Unbeknownst to me, he was the one who used her. But he billed her time as his time, so she didn't produce any time. I'm like, oh, I outed him unintentionally. I had no idea. As I'm writing it, it comes into focus. As I'm writing my fourth step, I attacked him publicly 2 days before I had her car towed. So I am the kind of person who will out somebody publicly because I just did it to him. I didn't mean to. I had no idea. So I went into his office and I said, I owe you an apology. And his jaw dropped. He's like, you do? I said, yeah. When I sent this email asking about Mary, I had no idea I was attacking the way you practice. It just didn't cross my mind. I was out of line. I should have come to you. I should have figured it out, and I should have come to you directly, not outed you to all the partners. I apologize. He never said anything about the car. But I didn't care. I cleaned up my side of the street. I knew I didn't have her car towed on purpose. I didn't know it was her car. I had the car towed on purpose. Don't get me wrong. I called and said, tow it. I didn't know it was hers. And I didn't have to. I do a lot of self-seeking. I want you to acknowledge that I didn't do it on purpose. Because it won't be right until you tell me it's okay. You know, that is probably one of the most cutting edges of my program right now, is just standing on my own 2 feet and saying, I didn't tow the car on purpose. And you're not going to believe me, or you're going to believe me, but it doesn't change it. I know, in my core, I didn't do it. Or, I'm wrong, I did it. Either way, I get to stand on my own 2 feet and I don't have to lean on you to make it okay. So this program allows people to develop very powerful relationships with other people because you become safe. You're a safe person if you're going to own your side of the street, clean up your side of the street, and own your stuff and come to me directly and say it. That creates opportunities for relationships that are significantly different than our standard culture cultivates. At the moment, I'm on the board of directors of the Spiritual Awareness Community in Bend, and it's going through a transition because its building's for sale. We sold the building to the current owner years and years before I got involved, and we have like free rent there forever. So the landlord is trying to sell the building subject to our free rent forever, and nobody's very happy about this except, you know, kind of maybe us. And so we're in this scary place. And one of the board members would come to board meetings, starting on the one I got elected at, and he would spew anger on everyone at the meeting. And I was like, are they always like this? I don't think I really want to be on this board. This is kind of like, really? I practice law. I don't need to do it in my spare time. This is not pleasant. But I thought, just wait and see. Because I'm not getting clear direction, I'll just wait and see. We met 3 or 4 times on the same kinds of topics, and finally things had kind of built to a head where this particular board member saying, we have abdicated our responsibility to this organization. I'm thinking, I'm on the committee that didn't do what you think we're supposed to do, and the committee thinks it's okay, but you don't think it's okay. So what I found myself doing was saying, are you really afraid about this? Because when you talk, I get filled with fear. And I know fear is contagious, so I'm just wondering. He's like, of course I'm angry. I'm terrified. I'm like, oh, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about fear and faith. The building, we can talk about another time, but let's talk about fear and faith and how we communicate to each other. And he went off. And I thought it was really interesting because I didn't buy in. I didn't need him to make it okay where I was coming from. He's a 12-step person, so we have some common ground. In fact, he said, now where does that put us? And I said, well, personally, I think it puts us on 4 to 9. And he got mad, then he started laughing. And the other people are like, what? I'm like, I have to tell them because that's code for something far more significant than 4 to 9. And so we began the process of working through fear as a group, as an organization, and being present for each other's fears without reacting to them. And I'm good at reacting to fear. I was so pleased that I knew I was feeling fear and that it wasn't mine. I'm good at picking up fear and I'll carry it around. It's mine. And to know, just a second, I don't have that fear until you start becoming upset and telling me what I've done wrong. And then to be able to invite a conversation about it without the reaction. It was really powerful stuff. It's like, wow, this is new. I haven't done it like this before. And that's kind of my whole life. This is new. I haven't done it like this before. So, and that's the result of working program. And you get to, I don't want to discount the significance of steps 1, 2, and 3 because you can't get anywhere without them. But 4 is where you get to, we have an opportunity to dig deeper, look at ourselves in a new way through lenses that don't have some kind of rose color or other fog. And then 5, we get to expose that to another person. And we get to pick our loving witness. Pick carefully. Make it somebody who's done it before. Probably. Unless you've done a lot of them and you want to cultivate a new sponsor. I need you to sponsor me on doing the 5th step. Because I've done a bunch. It's not as scary. The first time you do it with someone who's been there, done that. Because it can be really scary. And for me, personally, I have an added complexity because I'm a mandatory reporter. And the U.S. Supreme Court says I'm not exempt if I'm in a 12-step context. I'm still a mandatory reporter. So there are certain things I have to report if you tell me. So I have to remember to tell you that if you ask me to do a 5th step. Oh, yeah, except if you have to report child abuse or elder abuse, I might have to report you. Oh. So, just factor that in when you're deciding what you want to do. So some of you may have that issue come up for you, and it is important to know where those limits are. So pick someone safe, someone who you know, someone who loves you, someone who's not going to be your excuse for not doing it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Wendy.
This is the first time I've heard somebody raise the mandatory reporter issue. Have you found that it's been problematic?
I had 2 people who needed to report child sex abuse to me that they had participated in, not as the victim. And both were, almost adult relationships.
Wow.
Yeah, so it happened. And they were like, well, can't talk to you. Okay, that's fair. So it does come up. Hopefully less often than it does for me, but I didn't expect it to, but it does.
I never thought about it. I'm a preschool teacher. I'm a mandated reporter. If there ever was a mandated meeting, that's unpleasant. I never thought of it.
Yeah, it's just important to think about it because, I don't know what Alaska law is, but under Oregon law, I'm a mandatory reporter 24/7. If I see it at the grocery store, I'm a mandatory reporter. If I see it in the neighborhood, I'm a mandatory reporter. And there have been cases against attorneys who didn't report because we have insurance. So So if we don't report, we could get sued for not reporting and have personal liability for that. So I err on the side of reporting. I don't always have much information. Sometimes I go hunting information. Like, I'm in the parking lot and I'm going to follow you till you go to a car and I'm going to get your license plate. Because I don't think you'll tell me your name if I go up and ask you your name. Excuse me, I saw you beating the crap out of your child. I'd really like your name. Because I'm a mandatory reporter. Sometimes you don't have to pick every battle. So that's another little wrinkle that can happen. You should be mindful of it. So when somebody asks you to do a fifth step, disclose if you're a mandatory reporter. Fifth steps for me are kind of that exposing yourself to being vulnerable with another human being. It does not scare me, I could be wrong, to share it with myself or God. It's that another human being is going to look at me. Another human being who has all their own judgment and history and experience and perspectives is going to see me, really see me. And that's really, for me, very vulnerable. If I don't do it, I won't get better. I have to be able to open up and let you in, let you really see me, where there's no getting better. The first time I did a fifth step, I did it with an AA sponsor, and she kind of did it the AA way, at least that's my understanding, because nobody else's OA has done it this way. Because I met with her, I read her off my list, she said, this is great, and she had me recite the seventh step prayer, and she said, okay, now you've done 5, 6, and 7, go sponsor. It's like, oh, yay! All I have to do is make a list of people I've harmed. I'm off and running on 8. It was years later when I went back and picked up 6 and 7, which we'll talk about tomorrow morning, those are my favorite steps, because that's where the real change can happen. And in the big book, there are paragraphs. Not in the 12 and 12, not in the AA 12 and 12. Bill had figured out a little more to say about them by then. But it's important that you get your expectations clear on what your fifth step is. Are you going to burn what you did? Are you going to keep it so you can work on it? Use it to extrapolate step 6, 7. Because some people, I've had people say, let's burn it. I'm like, well, you can. It might be easier to do your sixth step if you don't burn it. We can burn it after the sixth step. But for me, I use my fourth and fifth. That side of the street, my part of it, is a big lead on sixth step. What are my defects of character? So I think communication. And when you're new, you don't even know what you don't know. You don't know what to ask. You don't know what not to ask. You don't know that some people burn them and some people don't. You don't know that some people just, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you're on step 8. And I was thrilled. Don't get me wrong. I was very happy to be on step 8. Whew, I made big gains today, and it was worth it because I worked really hard on 4 and 5. And it is a moral inventory, searching and fearless moral inventory. And fearless is optional. You can't postpone forever because it's not fearless. Just do it anyway. Because that's really the only thing you have to do. It's like, keep coming back. Just do the fourth step. Sit down and do it. And so again, I want to open it up, and then if we have time before dinner, I want to address another topic that's fundamental to our program, but not one of the steps specific. So we're now on step 6. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. For me, that is a process. And the first time, I already told you, I did the fifth step. My sponsor took me outside, had me pray the seventh step prayer, and said, you're done, 5, 6, 7, go do 8. And I said, yay, I did 3 in a day, this is great. And then over years, I began to realize, I'm hearing this thing about step 6 and the changes that happen, and step 7, and I'm still trying to make myself different. I seem to be missing something here. Because I'm hearing these people talk about how they did 6 and 7 and things changed. Like, I don't get it. I did 5, 6, and 7 right now and I'm making it happen. And that's really the fundamental difference for me between 6 and 7, doing 6 and 7, and Trish trying to be different. My experience with 6 and 7 was once I began to realize I needed to do something more and I began to write down defects of character, I thought, I need a withdrawal slip. I need a withdrawal slip from the bank because I'm going to withdraw these defects of character on the back, you know, where it has all those lines, and I'm going to put them on my withdrawal slip, and I'm going to give them to God by withdrawing them from myself. So I went to the bank and I searched and I found deposit slips. I was like, well, all right, I'll make do. I wasn't very happy about that. And I began to write down my defects of character on these fabulous, kind of torn up deposit slips. And then slowly it dawned on me, you don't get to withdraw them, Trish. You get to deposit them. Oh, thank you. Because it's not my job to withdraw them from myself. It's my job to deposit them with God and let God transform them in whatever way God plans to do that. Oh, that's funny how that works. When I'm not in charge, it just works. So I began to put together my deposit slip. This is not the first one I did, but it's the first one I kept. And interestingly, they included primarily things like rage, anger, easy frustration, demanding on oneself, demanding on others, lack portion control. Here's one. This is kind of interesting.